We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Abner Mares is a world champion boxer, Olympian, sports commentator, and most importantly, dad to two little girls. Beloved by abuelas and hardcore fans alike, Abner is a pro at entertaining the world, both in and out of the ring. On Blue Wire's new podcast, On the Hook with Abner Mares, we'll hear from Abner, his family, fellow athletes, and other people who made him the boxer and the man he is today. From his journey as a young kid on the streets to becoming a boxing champ, to everything from sports, music, culture, and family life, the On the Hook podcast is where you want to be. Listen to On the Hook with Abner Mares wherever you get your podcasts. Episodes in English are out on Tuesdays, and Spanish episodes are out on Wednesdays. Welcome to the RotoViz College Football Fantasy Podcast. I am your host, Stefan Lecoe, joined with my co-host, Matt Wispay. This podcast is brought to you by Blue Wire, Indeed, BetOnline, and of course, RotoViz. Matt, how you doing today, man?
I am good.
Good.
I'm not super energy right now.
Yeah, sounds like you could use a Monster or a Pepsi or something like that.
I am drinking sparkling water right now, which isn't doing the trick.
I am also drinking a sparkling water, but mine is infused with alcohol. I'm drinking a Snowmelt, which is from Upslope, which is a local Colorado company. We are not sponsored by them, but we should be because I drink these so much. They're also my in-between drink. So like if I'm drinking cocktails or something like that, and I'm like, man, I've had a couple cocktails, I should probably have some water. I grab a Snowmelt, you know, 5%. It's delicious and delightful. And I'm not an alcoholic, I promise you. It kind of sound like one, though.
It's all right.
Yeah. What's going on in the world of football? We've got some postponements we need to probably talk about, huh?
So, I mean, it finally hit the SEC. And truthfully, I think that we should expect this. There are going to just be weeks where it doesn't matter. If you do everything right, it's COVID's going to get in there and it sucks and whatever. I mean, we lost probably two really solid games. And then we also lost a Vanderbilt game. So, I mean, Oklahoma State and Baylor postponed because of COVID. Florida and LSU postponed because of COVID. That one makes me sad.
Yeah.
Let's just be clear. That would have been a like 71-70 kind of game. That would have just been fun.
I had it on my list as a potential lock with the over. And
yeah, I would have made fun of you for not doing that. It actually disappoints me as a John Emery truther, because he would have run all over them, and that would have been great. Yeah. It would have been because Florida is going to make every running back stock amazing. So Yeah, I mean, it's all right. We'll get it soon enough.
I mean, some news came out that was kind of frightening. The athletic director, Scott Strickland, said that some of the Florida players that tested positive already had some symptoms on Friday and played anyways because they thought maybe it was just allergies. So that kind of is troubling for Texas A&M, who they played last week. So hopefully they are all good there. Hopefully there was no transmission that took place. We obviously won't know right now. We don't know, but I'm sure we'll know by Saturday. So
yeah,
definitely something to keep in mind. Hopefully not a big deal, but yeah, it does make me nervous. And man, like you said, it's really hard to expect that all these teams get through this playing their entire slate of games.
And that's kind of why I like the conferences that are doing the daily rapid testing rather than relying upon just like 2 to 3 times a week. Because, I mean, whether or not these guys had COVID at that time, you can't assume allergies. You really do need to, in this day and age of we're trying to play football safe, we're trying to keep the environment as clean as possible. You really need to test them regardless. And it sucks for the kids because these rapid tests, they do suck. But at the same time, it's why the Big Ten was so adamant. The Big Ten, the Pac-12, all these conferences that like came back just recently on the idea of daily testing, largely because of that. You can't risk it because who knows? Maybe some of these kids who did test positive did spread it to 3 Texas A&M players, and now Texas A&M is at risk for a massive breakout.
Yeah, I really hope that's not the case. But honestly, yeah, I don't know.
The one unfortunate thing, it's a bad thing right now that we're reading this this headline, because the truth is, not all sickness in 2020 is COVID, and that's right. It's this one, like, you're allowed to cough in 2020, and it's not COVID. So hopefully it was just, they weren't, hopefully the incubation period hadn't started and these kids who ended up testing positive caught it because after the game they went out and had drinks with someone stupid. So fingers crossed. That's all we can say is fingers crossed that these guys weren't actually carriers and spreaders at the time of the game and that they were in fact just allergies.
Right. And hopefully the games, all of them, Vanderbilt, again, that's Vanderbilt, Mizzou, Oklahoma State at Baylor, and then the Florida LSU game. Hopefully they all get made back. This gives them, some of these teams, some time to get healthy, though, in other ways. I know Kyle Pitts had been struggling with that foot or ankle injury. So hopefully he has this extra week or so.
Week of free, like, health. Yeah.
Hopefully, yeah, he can. Yeah, hopefully he can get back to normal. Dude, so I play Madden a lot. This is a tangent. Obviously, whenever you start with dude, I play Madden. It's a tangent, but like one of the things that drives me crazy is like I'll be throwing the ball deep to DK Metcalf and he'll jump up to make the catch and then like he'll get hit by the corner and then like the ball just flies 20 yards away and it's incomplete. Kyle Pitts is like the exact opposite of that. You throw him a jump ball or any ball, like it just sticks to his hands. That first touchdown he caught, my God, like the dude just catches and anything in traffic. He doesn't care how many people are around him. He will go up and get the ball. No one's going to get it from him. I am so impressed with Kyle Pitts.
In fairness, I think real life DK Metcalf is also probably like that, but but no, yeah. Kyle, you're right. And it's Kyle Pitts is absurd. And truthfully, so we've been putting in some work in the last couple of days, just some transparency for our listeners. We've been spending some time in the last couple of days updating our Devy ranks because we felt like we were going to roll out this big new ranking system over the summer and then life happened for all of us and they kind of fell by the wayside, but now we're planning on rolling it out. And one of the players that I don't want to say had a difficult time ranking, but boy, did I put him with a really high grade at first, is Kyle Pitts. I think I told you guys this while we were kind of going back and forth, but my initial score that I put for him put Kyle Pitts 9th overall in my Devy ranks. And it's just because the value of a guy who is that dominant at one position in a position where there isn't a lot of greatness is super duper valuable. If he truly is what we think he is, which is the next Travis Kelce, George Kittle type, we're talking about a guy who, I mean, is going to be the feature guy. I mean, he's going to be one of the core guys on a lot of title rosters moving forward in dynasty leagues. And
absolutely,
for me, I think, I mean, if you can get this guy for a relatively inexpensive price in your dynasty league, or your, I'm sorry, not dynasty, your Devy league, you should be shooting out offers, because he's, I mean, he's the real deal.
Yeah. Yeah. We, you and I both have him at 8.8 and Travis has him at 8.9 out of 10. So yeah, we're all very high, very, very comparable on that. But yeah, I love him. I think he's incredible. Some other news though, before we get totally off the rails here, Skylar Thompson, quarterback for Kansas State, is out for the year. Real bummer.
Yeah, I mean, Kansas State had a lot, like, very real moments of fun. I mean, I think we, when we all watched that Oklahoma game, he was one of the guys that we came away saying, wow, he's really good. So yeah, just disappointing. I think we're all, it's just unanimous. We're all disappointed by this, because he's a good player, and it's probably a step back for a Kansas State team that, while they probably weren't a real contender, they were definitely the type of team that is going to make every week difficult. And now there might be a few weeks where they just kind of limp through them.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a bummer. And Kansas State was proven to be a difficult opponent in the Big 12. So be interesting to see how that shakes out rest of the year. Before we keep going though, just a quick outline for a show. We're going to talk about some of the things that we observed over the past week or season, depending on which way we go with things. Then we're going to jump into our review of last week, both the previewed games that we did, as well as our locks. Then we will jump into the future. We will look at some of the big games. Of course, we're going to preview the big showdown between Alabama and Georgia. Nope. And then, as always, we will finish up the show with our locks of the week. But before we do that, can we talk about my new favorite team?
Yeah, absolutely. Who's your new favorite team?
My new favorite team is Ole Miss. I just want to throw a couple of stats out real quick. Ole Miss is first in passing efficiency. They're second in total yards per game at 573. They are fifth in yards per play at 7.44. They're seventh in the league in the country in their third down conversion rate. They also are 67% on fourth down. If you kind of look at what they actually end up doing, because they've gone for it on fourth down quite a few times, if they hit third down 70% of the time, whether it's on third or fourth down, they end up getting the first down. They only have one turnover this year, and I am convinced that Lane Kiffin's sole purpose, the only thing he cares about, is getting all of his offensive players drafted. Matt Corral is having a stupid year so far. He's got a 76.1% pass completion. He's got he's thrown for almost 1,100 yards, a 9-1 touchdown interception ratio. Jerrion Ealy's getting it done, averaging 5.4 yards a carry, four touchdowns. Again, also throwing in five receptions for 67 yards. We've talked about Elijah Moore a lot. He's got 31 receptions already this year for 462 yards. And then Kenny Yeboah, their tight end, already has four touchdowns on 15 receptions. He's averaging 23.7 yards a catch. I love Ole Miss.
So a couple more stats to just add to the joy.
Yes.
So they are, because as we all know, their defense is also trash.
Absolutely, which helps right these numbers.
Right now they're averaging 77 offensive plays per game. They have an offensive success rate. So just total offensive success rate, they are at 49.78%. And that ranks 10th best in the country. Their passing success rate, which obviously this is a pass heavy team, is 58.33%. So that ranks fourth in the country. And what makes them actually fun is because literally every game is going to be a shootout. So defensively, their success rate allowed 62.2% overall. And on passing downs, or on just passing plays, it's 61.7%. Rushing plays, it's 62.6%. This is a team that does not, like, they're not stopping plays. They have a stuff rate of just over 10%, which is really bad. And they allow 4.07 line yards per play. And for every time a team gets within the 40-yard line, they're averaging 5.25 points per opportunity. This is a team that is going to get into shootouts. If I am Mr. Under, I love under plays. Do not bet an Ole Miss under.
Yeah, you won't be talking about Ole Miss much.
they're on a list with like three teams that I will not bet unders on this year.
Yeah. I'm sure you saw Roger Sherman's tweet about the fact that Ole Miss defense only prevented 41 total yards of offense against Alabama because they had a fumble at the 1 yard line. And then they had the one turnover. Oh no, they did punt at the 40-yard line. So like throughout the whole game, they either finished with a score or those two times. So only 41 yards prevented.
Damn near perfect. It's insane.
Unbelievable. So yeah, I just wanted to talk about how much I love Ole Miss. And serious question. Is he getting all these guys drafted? I mean, is Matt Corral like someone who is going to have some sort of opportunity at the next level? I mean, he's doing everything right now.
He is. And I will say this. He is ranked in my Devy ranks. And he was not ranked in my Devy ranks prior to the year. And I said he shouldn't be the starter before the beginning of the year. And I am being proven wrong pretty quickly.
Well, John Reese Plumlee's got 100% completion percentage. So, you know, maybe you're right. Maybe he just hasn't gotten the opportunity.
I'm still team. I like Corral. He was a highly regarded prospect. I believe he was a high 4-star prospect. He was actually the guy in like his recruiting class that they brought in. He was the gem. He was the guy that they were super excited about. So, I mean, talent seems to be there. He has the pedigree. Yeah, I mean, if he puts up another, I mean, he's probably not getting drafted after this year, or he's not eligible. No, he is. I don't know. He's not going pro after this year. So with two seasons of production with Lane Kiffin, he's going to make him look really good.
Yeah. And what about, because we've already talked about Elijah Moore and we awesome. Like him. What do you think about Kenny Eboah, this tight end? Do you think there's a path for him? Because he is just balling.
He'll get drafted. I mean, I think if you are a quality receiving tight end, you get drafted. With that being said, I'm not ranking him yet. I don't think he's in that world quite yet, but I do think that there's a path to him having relevance. It just will require. I mean, we're talking about a guy who's already a fifth-year senior. He's, he has the frame, but I mean, before we jump into like this whole realm of, oh, he's amazing, he has 15 receptions. Let's not make him out to be some Evan Engram type quite yet.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. Anyway, I just wanted to talk about my new favorite team. They're not actually my new favorite team, but they're on the list.
I mean, they should be. They're up there.
They're so fun.
And so the other team that's fun to watch right now and has been a team that you're now going, you tell me you hope they lose the rest of their games. Florida, their defense is bad. I mentioned Ole Miss's defensive success rate, ranking third on that list, by the way, a whole almost 10% better than Ole Miss is Florida. They're at 53.16% of defensive success rate, at 59.2 on rushing. So, and they only stuff about 12% of plays. So Florida is another one of those teams. The big thing to watch for them is anybody who plays against Florida, you probably, if you're a college football DFS player, that running back is probably going to be a little bit expensive because it's starting to come out that Florida is bad on defense. So this is a team that I would say is a target. The old way, like in normal DFS, in NFL DFS a couple of years ago, it was like Arizona tight ends always, or
right.
This is a team, start the opposing running back against Florida because their tacklers are bad. I believe they have allowed pretty much everyone who has played against them has now leads, the conference in broken tackles. Isaiah Spiller basically looked like a god out there against him. And I'm still not high on Isaiah Spiller. We talked about this game getting postponed. I'm really disappointed because John Emery was going to be a guy that I heavily threw into lineups. And yeah, I mean, I'm still kind of in that camp. So yeah, just keep that thing stashed. Florida's defense is going to be really bad. They're going to give up a lot of points. It's probably why I tweeted out that I've kind of flipped back. I now think that Georgia is very likely to beat this Florida team. And I wouldn't even be shocked if they get tripped up against a team like Tennessee.
Right. It's hard to play. It's hard to have much confidence in Florida with the play of that defense. I tweeted out on Saturday because I lost a lot of money. Lost a lot of money on Florida this week, friends. So trust me, when I give you recommendations for like my locks, I am losing money when I don't get it. So don't feel bad. I lost money on Florida and I said I will never pick them again. I'll never put money on them again because I just can't trust them. You can't trust that defense. Their offense is going to score. I might bet on their overs, but I'm just not. I don't think totals. I can. Yeah, I don't think I can bet them straight up against a spread because unless they're maybe an underdog or something like that. But I just, man, they just cannot trust that defense. But speaking of betting, I wanted to just talk for a few minutes about how I actually make money betting because a lot of you are probably wondering how I'm on this podcast with my locks being as not great as they've been. Although I did have a winning record this week. But one of the things that I do that I think is a pretty surefire way to make a couple extra bucks is at halftime, spend some time on your app or wherever you're doing your betting. So I live in Colorado, so I can use apps, which is nice. And I like checking out some kind of crazy halftime scores. So this last week, the halftime line for the Georgia, who is Georgia playing? Tennessee. Georgia-Tennessee was at -3. And if you were watching the game, you could kind of tell that things were fluky. Georgia had given up a special teams mistake that led to a touchdown and stuff like that. And I was like, Georgia -3? Are you kidding me? Of course, Georgia's the better team. They've been a second half team so far this year. And so I just went crazy with a big bet on Georgia -3. And it worked out, of course. Earlier in this year, I told you guys that Oklahoma against Missouri State, they were like favored by 89 at halftime, something stupid like that. So every week, there's not a lot of them, but you can find one or two halftime scores that are just kind of wonky that if you are willing to kind of double down, you can make some money. So that's what I've been doing. I'll start tweeting out what I see at halftime, which ones I'm going to be putting money on. So follow me on Twitter for that. That's at StayFunLaco. And of course, you want to be following Wispy the Kid over here, Matt. He's also very active on Twitter. On game days as well. So
yeah, but it's a lot of nonsense for me. I just troll fan bases.
No, but which is also fun. People need that. People need that joy in their life. Before we move on to the games, though, I just kind of wanted to go through the SEC receiving leaders after 3 weeks because there's some pretty fun names in here. And I just wanted to get your thoughts. First, I thought it was interesting. This list contains, so we're just going to do the top five. And only three schools are represented in the top five. We've got two Ole Miss players and two players from Alabama and then one from LSU. So number one is Elijah Moore from Ole Miss with 462. Terrace Marshall is number two with 424. He got half of those last week. Jalen Waddle is number three with 396. Then Kenny Yeboah, the tight end that we've been mentioning, his 355 yards. And then Devonta Smith from Alabama with 316 yards. So five names, three schools. Just kind of wanted to get your thoughts. Which one of these players do you think has the other than how I was going to say, which one do you think will fall out of this? But the tight end is probably the one that's easiest. So which of these guys are you most confident continues to put forth this dominant of a season?
I mean, if you're asking me right now to pick who's going to lead the SEC in yards, it's going to be Elijah Moore. This is now his second straight season of being a target hog for the Ole Miss team, and now he's on a target hog for a really good offense. So,
double-digit catches in all 3 weeks. Unbelievable. I
mean, that it's what he is. He's a guy that the coaching staff has absolute trust in him getting the ball and making a play. I don't see a path to him not being among... I mean, it's hard to say the leader, but he's definitely going to be one of the top three, and if I was picking the guy to lead the SEC in receiving yards at the end of the year, it's him. And honestly, won't be shocked if he leads the country.
Yeah. Well, the guy I was impressed with, Terrace Marshall, again, these offenses with poor defenses are kind of exciting because Marshall just went nuts last week, going for 200 plus yards against Missouri in a loss. And I think that defense hemorrhaging points is really going to give him the opportunity to really shine. And he doesn't have a whole lot of competition as far as just outright crazy talent. I wonder, do you think it's a for sure thing? Like Terrace is a junior, I believe. Do you think he'll declare this year?
Yes.
I hope you're right.
I mean, so we talked about him. We've talked about Marshall a lot. Like we're one of I would say coming into this year, even going into like last year, heck, even when Jordan was on the pod still, Terrace Marshall was a guy we were bringing up as the touchdown guy on that offense and was really probably the biggest touchdown threat they had on that offense last year. But it was just kind of overshined by Justin Jefferson being stupid and good and Jamar Chase being a top 10 overall player in this upcoming draft, that it was really actually almost like disappointing to see Marshall sit there with like these reduced numbers. And now he's having this chance when everybody left. And now there's only really one true target on this offense. And he's just getting the workload. I'm really happy to see it. He's a guy that I've liked since, I'm going to say before his sophomore season. I don't want to act like I'm one of those guys who was on him as a high school recruit. I knew he was a high pedigree guy, but I hadn't quite bought in yet. So, I mean, I'm happy to see it. I think he's going to go after this year. And I would say if they continue doing, I mean, if their games are going to keep being shootouts, he's another guy that's going to be up towards the top of this list.
Yeah. I mean, all these guys are pretty exciting on their offenses.
So in our re-rank, I'm quickly pulling or looking where we have him for all of us. I mean, this was a guy that was in summer drafts. And so Devi Watch, who is a, I'm going to call him a friend of the pod. They're good guys. I'm pretty good friends with all the owners. They run a bunch of mock Devi drafts over the summer. And this was a guy who was late third, potentially early fourth round pick in a lot of these drafts. Yeah. You have him at 12th. I have him at 18th. And I kind of feel bad about that. And Travis has him at 14th. So, I mean, we always talk about how much volume matters. He's jumping two rounds in our Devi ranks.
Yep.
Largely based on this like couple of games where he's getting this kind of volume and proving that he can be the alpha wide receiver on a good offense.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And preseason, I had been moving Tamorion Terry up and it was pretty easy to be like, oh, I need to swap those two guys out right away because their stock has just gone in completely opposite directions. So yeah, he's someone that we definitely like. And yeah, maybe we should dig in a little deeper and maybe you should write an article about him, Matt.
I'm busy these days, but
yeah,
sure.
Well, I mean, we're all busy, especially you business owners out there. Even though sports had a break, we know that your business didn't, and you have to keep moving, and that makes hiring more important than ever, and Indeed is here to help. Indeed.com is the number one job site in the world because Indeed gets you the best people fast. Unlike other sites, Indeed gives you full control and payment flexibility over your hiring. You only pay for what you need, you can pause your account at any time, and there are no long-term contracts. Plus, Indeed provides powerful tools to make sure your search that much easier. Like sponsored jobs, which are shown to be 3.5 times more likely to result in a hire. With 73% of online job seekers visiting Indeed each month, Indeed is going to get you the important hire that you need. Just like they have for over 3 million businesses. So right now, Indeed is offering our listeners a free $75 credit to boost your job post, which means more quality candidates will see it fast. Try Indeed with a free $75 credit at Indeed.com/BlueWire. This is their best offer anywhere. Go right now to Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. This offer is valid through December 31st. All right, Matt, let us get into week 6 review.
So week 6 was a good one. So I went 2-1 on locks. I did have one game get postponed. Screw you. Hurricane Delta, I think, is what canceled that one. Whatever. Sure. Brings me to 10-7-2 on locks for the season. And then on regular games, I was actually pretty happy about this one. It's weird to say because I always jokingly say that I don't put the effort into these picks in the same way that I put into them, but there was one game I cared about. And we'll talk about that one here in a little bit. And I was so happy to be on the right side of that one this year. 12-13 on my regular games for the year. So happy about that. Quickly running through my lots bets that did play, Syracuse +2.5 versus Duke. That was the loser. Sadly, that was the article pick for this week. I don't know what happened in this game. I intermittently was checking the score. Seemed like Syracuse had chances and they just kind of stunk it up. Louisiana Tech and UTEP under 52. This was a game that I was super duper high on. Game only got to 38 points. UTEP's offense is horrific. You'll hear this again later. BYU and UTSA was the game I kind of threw on because you bullied me into doing more picks. Under 63.5. I said that I thought that BYU was going to run away with this and would eventually get tired of scoring. I'm going to be honest, the game didn't really go like that. UTSA's defense came out to play. There were a lot of moments in this game where if you were a BYU backer, you were really worried. And right. I saw there was it was something crazy. I think there was like a $50,000 bet that was placed on BYU money line that was going to pay out like $3,000 or something like that. Like that's how big they were of a favorite. And yeah, I mean, it was a money line bet. And if you were watching that game in the middle of the third quarter, that guy was freaking out.
Yeah, that game got tense.
and then I did have Florida Atlantic and Southern Miss get postponed. So screw you, Hurricane Delta.
Yeah, yeah. And that was one that I was excited about because I liked your logic and reasoning behind
my principle.
Yep. I did personally put some money down on the La Tech UTEP under. I thought that was a lock for sure, and I was happy to make money with you on that one. I had a pretty good week. I went 3-2 on my locks, so I'm up to 9-12 now. Again, I'm working on it. And then I went 3-3 on the others, so I'm 13-12 on the regular season for those games. My locks were, like I mentioned, Florida -6.5. That did not work at all for me, but I also had the over in that game. It was at 56.5. The total was ended at 79. Florida's defense, we've talked about, man, they just cannot stop Spiller. It was super frustrating. They had an opportunity to get it at the end there and turn the ball over. It was really, really disappointing. My other loss was Louisville -4 at Georgia Tech. The final score in this one's a little misleading. Louisville had the lead at halftime. Georgia Tech ended up scoring like 21 points in a row or something like that. And many of them were like with just a couple minutes left. So that one got ugly fast. I was pretty disappointed about that. My other wins were, I took the over in the Vatek UNC game. That one hit 101. So the 59 was an easy win. And then I also took Georgia -12.5. They ended up winning by 23 or so. So that was also very nice. So good week overall. Want to get into some of the games? I mean, we both were on the UNC game. The player you were wanting to watch was Raheem Blackshear. What did you think of him?
He's fine. I mean, the fact that he isn't getting a significant amount of carries doesn't really surprise me, but I like seeing him get utilized. The receiving production kind of sucks. So I always kind of downplay how much yards matter when it comes to receiving work, but he had 3 receptions for 1 yard, and that just kind of sucks. I can't really hype that up unless you're in a PPR league and then it's fun. but I mean, he did what he was supposed to. 4 yards a carry isn't great. I'm not going to hype him as some super duper, prospect that you need to get on all your rosters. Like I think I even said it last week. I think he's probably going to be like a kick returner in the NFL, but he's mm-hmm. going to be a kick returner in the NFL. So, I like to watch him 'cause he's fun.
Yeah. My guy in this game was Khalil Herbert, and I thought he did pretty well, actually. He went 13 for 138 yards and had 2 touchdowns. This Virginia Tech UNC game was weird because Vatek had so many players out with COVID. I think their entire secondary was out. And they also started the Oregon transfer Burmeister instead of Hooker, which ends up looking pretty foolish because once they switched out to Hooker, Vatek really stormed back and almost made a game out of it. This one was very entertaining, especially rooting for the over. I felt pretty confident at halftime that it was going to hit. I think it hit with 8 minutes left.
I felt confident after the first quarter. I told you this thing was a winner. So because I like exposing our DMs every once in a while, you're sitting there like, Virginia Tech needs to start scoring. Virginia Tech needs to start scoring. And sure, they did. He said that it was 21-0 in the first quarter. Guess what that's pacing at? 84. You're good.
Yeah. I mean, they did need, because UNC only scored 56 and I needed 59. So I needed at least a field goal from Vatek.
Yeah, it was. That was a fun game to watch, and I was pretty happy that I suggested taking UNC right before the game to you, because all of those, they just came out with all of the information about the secondary being out, and I knew it was going to turn into a high scoring affair.
Yeah, and I'll be interested to see what Virginia Tech does going forward. I can only assume that Hooker will be the starter, but they've got a fun offense. Their defense is obviously suspect. I'll be curious. I know that they've got a lot of uncertainties about who's all going to be playing this week against Boston College, but definitely one to keep an eye on. And if you see a bunch of players out, maybe just look at that over under and see if it's a line you want to play. But the next game, it's funny, man, how the times have changed. We're 35 minutes into the podcast and we're only now talking about the Red River rivalry between Texas and Oklahoma. This game was nutty, nutty Nutterson. I just couldn't believe it. Texas 45, Oklahoma 53. In about a million overtimes. Your boy Seth McGowan was a late scratch.
Ooh, yeah,
some sort of injury. I'm not exactly sure what happened, but he did not play. And man, they ended up giving it to, I don't even remember his name,
TJ Pledger.
Pledger, yeah, who was fine, I guess.
I mean, I think that's what we thought about him was TJ Pledger's fine. He wasn't expected to be the guy this year. So, I mean, neither was McGowan. This was supposed to be Kennedy Brooks' team, and I feel like they were missing the effects. I mean, we say that Pledger averaged 6 yards a carry and scored two touchdowns. That was well over 100 yards. He did very well. I think they probably would have been a little bit better served having McGowan in there. But, I mean, if you are a Spencer Rattler questioner, if you're like fearing him, this game gave you a lot of ammunition. He did have a kind of terrible turnover in the first half and got benched. And I wonder, and I kind of like to think of that as a Lincoln Riley said, all right, this guy's struggling really bad in the second quarter. Let's go put him off on the sidelines and let him think about what he's did. He put him in the corner. He put him in timeout for a little bit and said, all right, Spencer, you go calm down. Stop giving the ball to the other team. So it was crazy. And I will say, there are some bad beat stories that came out of this game. If you were live betting on this game on Texas, I am sorry, because you probably lost in the only way physically possible.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that, I mean, great game. Neither one of these teams should, no one should think these two teams are great. No one should think these two teams are awful. And offensively, these two teams are going to score points. That should be your takeaway. And these are two of the other teams that I am not playing the under on for the rest of this year.
Although the under would have hit in this one had it not gone to overtime. And Texas's offense really turned around when they got down big. And it kind of reminded me of that Texas Tech game where they came back. And you just kind of wonder, like, why aren't they playing a more up-tempo style of offense from the get-go? Because that's when they really seem to be clicking. The player I was watching, though, was Marvin Mims, freshman wide receiver for OU. He had four receptions on four targets for 52 yards and a touchdown. Again, nice seeing the freshmen involved, but I also know they don't have a whole lot of other options right now just because of injuries and stuff like that. But I mean, it's nice seeing Mims involved, and it's nice seeing him produce.
I mean, I've been a big Charleston Rambo guy. He only had two receptions for 16 yards. If you're a Theo Weiss believer, this is a game that you should be looking at it with some positive thoughts, because eight receptions for 52 yards for Weiss, they're starting to look to him a little bit more. So I think overall, if you're trying to come away with offensive thoughts about this game, the big one is Rattler is a freshman, essentially. Like, he's a redshirt freshman, but the talent appears to be there at times. Just fingers crossed that he stops making bonehead plays. And if you are looking at the receiving crew, there's no CeeDee Lamb.
Yeah.
At least not yet.
Yeah, I think that's spot on. And you were spending a lot of time watching that game. And while you were doing that, I was over watching Florida, Texas A&M. like I said, I had a lot of monetary investment in this, and I was on Florida -6.5. Obviously, they ended up losing by 3, 38-41 to Texas A&M. A really interesting game. Florida looked like they were in decent control of it for a while, but their defense just could not stop Isaiah Spiller. He ended up going 27 for 174 and 2 touchdowns. He also had a reception for 18 yards. He had a really solid performance. I know he wasn't the player that either one of us was watching, but what do you, I mean, you said you're kind of lower on him than maybe consensus is. And so you had mentioned that he does really well against, if I recall, you mentioned he does really well against bad defenses and struggles against the good ones. So,
yeah. And I mean, so his big, he had the game that you're like kind of touting from his 2019 campaign. And I'm just going to quickly pull it up. The game that you tout from that was, oh, look, he crushed this LSU team. He crushed it. Well, LSU's defense last year for most of the season was pretty bad. And he had 6 yards per carry against them. So, but I mean, so far he is still mostly feasting on bad defenses. I do think that you can look at this one and say, at least he's not getting out athleted. So, I mean, yeah, I this was a good performance. It's definitely, I can't justify having him as like a late fourth round pick like I did before. So now he is moving up into the realm where he should probably be drafted. I'm still probably low on him, but
yeah,
it's all right. I think he's a good player. I think this was a good performance, but please stop before you go and like put him in the realm of a Travis Etienne, because he's not in the same realm.
Right. And maybe this is a good opportunity to sell high after a performance like that, or maybe wait and check the schedule and see when they're playing another.
Or running back is gross. So he's sort of a no, or he'll probably get drafted, and he broke out early-ish. So hold on to him for a little bit.
Sure. Next game up, number 14, Tennessee at number 3, Georgia. The line was 12.5. Sorry. We were both on Georgia. They ended up pulling away in the second half. 21-44 was a final score. Really was a tale of two halves. Georgia got a couple of key turnovers to start the second half and really rolled and put them away. Tennessee couldn't do much at all offensively in the second half. Eric Gray was a player you were watching. He ended the day with only 8 carries for 25 yards, but he did have 8 receptions for 54, so he did get involved in the passing game.
I mean, that's kind of what I expected to happen. I didn't expect Eric Gray to go out and dominate this Georgia defense, which is the best in the country. But I mean, this wasn't like Leonard Fournette a couple years ago against Alabama getting 1 yard. This was a reasonable performance, and he was more effective than his running back committee counterpart, Ty Chandler. So happy to see it. I think 8 receptions is a solid day. Again, in DFS, he kind of seems like he's going to be a guy that should be in a lot of lineups most weeks, because heck, if they're going to use him out of the backfield this much, then he's going to have a lot of value.
Yeah. The guy I was watching was Kerris Jackson. He had 4 for 91 and a touchdowns, and he leads the team in receiving. And I'm wondering, what are your thoughts here on, because the guy we were all high on was Pickens for
still
Georgia.
Stay high on him.
And but what are you doing with Kerris Jackson? Is he someone that you're starting to pay attention to a little bit more?
No.
Why is that? I mean,
because he's a third year player. It's, I probably need to move him up and start taking him a little bit more seriously, but he's not going, I mean, he's at about 40% right now for market share. I just expect that, I mean, realistically, I expect that George Pickens is going to start being utilized more frequently because he is more talented. What we saw out of Pickens last year was remarkable, and I just don't expect him to maintain this near 40-something percent market share yards. With that being said, I'll probably have to revisit him in like a week or two, because if he continues to be the guy, I mean, I might have to. And this is where his relationship with Stenson Bennett probably is a big factor here, is he's probably worked with him more than a Pickens, who is likely working a lot with Newman and Dwan Mathis. So
yeah,
who knows? I mean, I can't write him off. He's definitely a player, but I don't know. when you're talking about a third year guy who only prior to this game or prior to the season had 79 career receiving yards, he's not going to be a guy that ends up with a high breakout. He's not going to be or an early breakout. And yeah, I mean, we'll see. Probably a guy that we have to start not seeing as nothing, but probably not someone who you need to push high up your ranks yet.
That's good. That's kind of what I did. I put him up there, but not up there very high. So let's move to probably the most fun game. Alabama at Ole Miss. Alabama was favored by 24. Final score was 63-48. So you did not get your cover with Alabama. Ole Miss was my pick. So that was one where I made up some ground on you. But the player you're watching is someone who I think is super fascinating. That's John Metchie, wide receiver for Alabama. He went 4 for 75. Unbelievable that Alabama scored 63 points and somehow he did not score a touchdown. Maybe that's because Najee Harris stole them all.
I mean, yeah. No, I mean, big game for Harris. I think we all were kind of hoping to see that from him because, I mean, he's the other guy in this class at running back. We know Chuba, we know Etienne, but Harris is the other guy that was he returned to school. And yeah,
he went 206 with five. So yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he looked, again, we mentioned previously, Ole Miss defense is really atrocious. So don't use this as like your justification for putting Najee Harris in the first round. Either he was already there or this game probably only moved him up a slot or two for you, but he looked really good. I did mention that I thought at least one of these wide receivers would break out, and I thought that it would be Metchie. Boy, was I wrong. Devonta Smith, 13 for 164 and a touchdown. Jalen Waddle, 6 for 120 and no touchdowns. Yeah, that's kind of insane that I picked the one that did terribly. The one thing that I continue to be really excited by, Jalen Waddle's yards per reception is fun. It's joy personified for me right now because he's not getting the same utilization. He doesn't seem to be the guy that they're going for like double-digit targets each or double-digit receptions each week. But when he gets the ball, he sure makes the most of it. 20.8 yards per reception so far this year. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah. He had a lovely, lovely outing. And he also, for Devonta Smith, that is, also had a rushing touchdown. So he did go nuts. The guy I was watching was Doobie, talked about a little bit off the top. That's Elijah Moore. Like we said earlier, third straight game with double-digit receptions. He went 11 for 143. Also somehow could not find the end zone. There was a lot of touchdowns going around, but he did not find one of them. But what a fun game. We've talked about Ole Miss a lot. We'll talk about Alabama a little bit more when we do the breakdown of Alabama-Georgia. But I am really impressed by both these offenses. And I'm curious when we get to Georgia what your thoughts are, the Alabama-Georgia game that is. I'll be curious to hear your thoughts on Bama's defense because I think that could be the group that decides that game. But before we go to next week's previews, let's talk about Miami at Clemson. Clemson ended up destroying Miami 42-17. That 14 number was not even close. I got this one wrong. You got it right.
Do you remember what I had in here by my pick to share? Yeah. So I had Clemson by murder in this game because I thought that we were going to see exactly what we saw, which was a very real difference in tier of talent wise. Clemson is two good teams in college football, two very good teams in college football. That is Alabama and that is Clemson. And I think Clemson might be in a tier all by themselves at the moment, but Miami was essentially put in a situation where they were not going to be able to run the ball meaningfully in any capacity. And Derek King is an incredibly average passer. So Clemson feasted. They got, I think he either threw two or three picks in this game, but King was basically made useless. And I mean, as someone who has been low, I've been trying to slow people slightly on Miami because they weren't in the same realm. I was pretty happy to see this outcome go basically as I expected.
Yeah. The King threw two picks and then Perry, Ekosi Perry, the backup, also threw a pick. So yeah, it was pretty ugly. as a guy who kind of likes Miami, I had a pretty good feeling how this was going pretty early. Miami just could not stop anything and really could not move the ball at all. King only ended up the game with 121 yards passing. The team rushed for only 89 yards. So, I mean, just an overall dominating performance for the Clemson Tigers. I was curious what my boy Revan Jordan would do. He only pulled in 3 for 31, pretty disappointing. And he has seemed to struggle against more elite defenses. So that is definitely a knock on him. We're going to jump into our week 7 preview. But before we do that, just a quick word from our friends and colleagues at RotoViz.
What's up, listeners? This is Curtis Patrick. I just wanted to stop by and say thank you for supporting RotoViz Radio. You are the absolute best audience in the business, and I know it. As a special thank you, I'm offering 10% off your next RotoViz subscription. Just use code 2020RVRadio at checkout. That's right. Go to rotoviz.com, click subscribe, and enter code 2020RVRadio at checkout for 10% off. You can even extend your subscription. Oh, and one more thing. If you haven't ever done it, please rate and review the podcast you're listening to right now on Apple Podcasts. It's really easy. It only takes like 10, 15 seconds. Just do it. We'd love to hear your feedback. Now, back to the show.
All right, it's time to look ahead. Week 7 preview. Let's start with Pitt at the team we were just discussing, Miami. Miami is favored by 10.5. What you got?
This is a low total game. The game right now is only the total's only in the low 50s right now, or in the high 40s right now. 10.5 points is a lot. I think Pitt's defense is a slightly better matchup for this Miami defense than they've been the last couple of weeks for games they've been playing. In a low total game, big spread tends to favor the underdog. I'm taking Pitt.
Hang on a second. I think we might have better lines here. I'm just checking real quick. I'm with you, though. I think Miami wins this game. I do think there's going to be a bit of a problem. No, I'm still seeing it at 10. Never mind. I think Miami's big problem was that two big problems they had was the offensive line as well as the receiving core. Pitt is amazing on the defensive line. I think they'll be able to bully Miami a little bit. And unless Miami can really get things going through the air, I don't think they're going to have much chance of winning by two touchdowns. I think Miami squeaks this one out, but give me Pitt with the points.
Who, by the way, the best line is 13.5. So we are definitely getting some extra points.
Yeah. Who do you got? What player you watched in this one?
So, I mean, you have to watch Addison. He, as much as I am not really a fan of this Pitt offense, and I don't think Kenny Pickett is going to make anyone a star. Addison's getting a whole lot of work early, and I mean, early breakout matters, so keep an eye on him.
Yeah, I'm curious about our boy Cameron Harris again. Really couldn't do much last week. I'm curious and a little concerned if it's 2 weeks in a row where he's not able to produce against a good defense. Maybe that early hype after the first couple of weeks needs to be adjusted. Let's move on. We've got Ole Miss, my favorite team, at Arkansas. This game, the line has moved down. Arkansas is getting 1.5 points. Who you got in this one?
I like Ole Miss in this spot, but I don't love it. I think that Arkansas is a very live dog here. I don't know if anybody is stopping Ole Miss this season, and I think the best way to stop them is to actually just keep them off the field. And in that spot, I think it's just, I don't know if Arkansas is the team that is going to be good enough to stay on the field and just not let this offense do whatever they want. So I'm watching in this game. I'm going to be honest. I'm just going to watch Elijah Moore. He's fun.
Yeah. I'm also on Ole Miss on this one. Again, how can I not be? They're my favorite team. I'm watching Jerry Neely. I was really impressed with him. He had 19 rushes for 120 and 2 touchdowns. He's a sophomore running back for Ole Miss, and I think he's going to keep it rolling against the Hogs. Give me Ole Miss -1.5. I think they have no problem with that number. I do think it could be a little bit of a slow start, maybe a little bit of a letdown after the emotional loss that, Lane Kiffin going up against Saban, all that good stuff. But for the most part, I feel pretty confident that Ole Miss can take care of business. Arkansas, I think one of the reasons people are excited about them is they've looked so much better than what we were expecting. And they've, I think they're like 3-0 against the spread so far this year, but those have been such big numbers. This is a small number. I'm curious if they're able to hang in the moment where they're, you know, like you said, a lot of people are considering them a live dog. They, this opened up at 3.5. And so the fact that it's moving more into Arkansas's favor, I kind of like that. So, give me Ole Miss. Let's move on. UCF, one of our, this is a matchup right up your alley. We've got UCF at Memphis. Memphis is getting 3.5 points, I believe. Is that the line here?
Yeah. I double checked it.
Perfect. So Memphis +3.5. You lean in that way, or are you going to go UCF?
I'm actually very torn on this game. I think there's a decent chance Memphis wins this game outright, but I think it's going to be a shootout. So I'm taking UCF because of volatility reasons. They play at an incredibly high pace. They are actually the final team that I will not be ever taking the under on, because they just play at such an absurd pace. These are two of the top 10 teams in plays per game. Hooray, points. And the player I'm watching here, there aren't a ton of Memphis players that I'm super interested in this year, kind of like DeMonte Coxey. But the guy I'm watching out for is their running back, Rodriguez Clark. He's a junior or a redshirt sophomore, but so far he's leading the team in rush attempts and rushing yards. Memphis has been starting to put guys into the NFL over the past couple of years, whether it be Gibson or Henderson. There just seems to be some value there, so I'm keeping an eye on him.
Yeah, I like it. I'm actually also on UCF. I feel your concern that Memphis might keep this close in a high-scoring affair. Player I'm watching is Dylan Gabriel. He's 87 for 139 so far, with 1,155 yards, 9 touchdowns, 2 interceptions. I like this guy. I think he has potential to be worthy of a draft pick. I'm curious what he can do at the next level. We've talked about him before. So give me UCF. This one, I just think that UCF is going to want to prove something here. This is their first game in how long that they are not ranked. I don't know. I didn't actually look, but I'm curious. But coming off a loss, I think they're going to bounce back pretty strong here. So UCF -3.5 feels good. Let's move on to the ACC. North Carolina -13.5 at Florida State. What you got?
Taking North Carolina. So last week we had Notre Dame against Florida State, and Florida State managed to cover. The difference in that game is that Notre Dame doesn't like to score a lot of points. North Carolina does like to score a lot of points. I think that in this game, North Carolina is going to really try and put up a ton, and I don't think this Florida State offense is capable of keeping up. I am watching Dyami Brown in this game because he's fun and because I believe Tomorion Terry's out for this week, so whatever.
Yeah, I am curious how Florida State will be if they do, in fact, turn the reins over to Jordan Travis. I'm curious if they'll be able to hang, but I don't think they will. I'm also on North Carolina at -13.5. I thought this number would be more like 16, so I felt pretty good about it. Pick your running back as far as a player I'm watching. Both running backs for North Carolina had just had heydays, but I really liked what I saw from Javonte Williams. He went 20 for 169 and 2 touchdowns last week versus Virginia Tech. So I am excited to see what he will do against a Florida State defense that has been not impressive at all. Last game that we're going to talk about before we jump into our locks, the big one, number 3, Georgia versus number 2, Alabama. Alabama, is the line really down to -4?
Yeah, I just double checked it. It's almost across the board at 4.
Great. So who do you got in this one? Tell me why. Let's spend a little bit more time on this one, maybe.
So I'm a little bit torn on this game. Georgia's defense is going to be the first, like, very good defense that Alabama faces this year. And coming off a game against Ole Miss where they kind of had success wherever they wanted to have success. Like we said, they were 41 yards away from being perfect. I'm a little bit concerned about where Alabama is going to be at in this game, because it's going to be a very different pace. It's going to be a very different feel to this game. And Georgia really just likes to wear out their opponents. With that being said, the one fear we have with Georgia is, if this game turns into a Alabama scores quick on a couple of drives, can Georgia survive a 3-and-out? And that becomes a little bit more of a question mark. There's definitely going to be more punts in this game than there was against Ole Miss. It's definitely not going to be a super duper high scoring game where if we touch 100, I'll be a little bit surprised. So I'm still taking Alabama -4. I don't feel as confident as I thought I would feel. But that might just be because of, I kind of think tempo is going to be the determining factor in this game. So I am taking Alabama. I don't think they're going to blow this number out of the water. And I'm going to watch Jalen Waddle because I really like Jalen Waddle.
Yes, you do. And I agree with your assessment on a lot of this. I'm also taking Alabama -4. I have a lot of confidence in the team being able to kind of not do whatever they want against Georgia. I think Georgia's defense is very good, but I find it really difficult to imagine a scenario where Alabama doesn't put up at least 4 touchdowns. And I just don't see this Georgia offense being able to really do a whole lot. I know maybe that's a little bit unfair. They did put up quite a few points last week, but I just don't know if I see Stenson Bennett being able to move the ball at the type of pace and level that he's going to need to be able to keep up with the likes of Jalen Waddle, Devonta Smith, all these guys that we've already talked about. I think Alabama's offense is way too powerful for Georgia to be able to keep up. And while I think Georgia's defense is much better than Alabama's defense, I don't think it makes up for it. I think the Crimson Tide are going to be able to scheme up ways to get Waddle or Mechie or Smith or whomever it might be. They have so many weapons. I just don't think you can contain them. So give me Alabama. I was comfortable taking this at 6. I'm very comfortable taking it at 4. I think this one is ends up being kind of over kind of quick. Maybe not as crazy as what we saw last week with Clemson Miami, but I don't actually anticipate this being all that close. Player I'm watching is Stetson Bennett, mainly because I don't think he's all that good. I think he's just fine, but I don't think he'll be able to keep up with Alabama's offense. So,
and if you're a Georgia fan that is not really a fan of Stetson Bennett, you might actually be okay if you get crushed this week, because if he gets crushed and all of a sudden looks over his head, this is a spot where JT Daniels can maybe emerge back into the conversation of maybe he starts next week.
Yeah, no, I think that's a really good point. Before we get into our locks, I just want to let you know a little bit about BetOnline. BetOnline, they're awesome. They're our good friends, and we love them. They're going the extra mile to make sure that you can get in on every possible chance to win this season. From game spreads and totals to team, player, and coaching props, BetOnline gives you more options to wager than anywhere else. You can get in our season opening bonuses, start off wagering on wins, division, and championship futures all day, every day. Head to BetOnline today and take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. Don't forget to use the promo code BLUEWIRE at betonline.ag. That's BLUEWIRE, it's all one word, and BetOnline is your online sportsbook experts. Let's get into the locks for week 7. I got a bunch on here, so I'm going to go ahead and just go first. That Bama-Georgia game, that's one of my locks. Alabama are 4-2 against the spread in the last 6 games when playing as a favorite. And in the last 2-plus seasons, so all of last season, all the season before, and so far this year, they've only not beaten a team by 6 3 times, and those all happen to be losses. So when they're winning by more than 6, and I expect that to happen again. I don't think Georgia upsets them. Give me Bama -4. Lock it up.
All right. I like that pick. I was very close to playing the under on that game and have now subsequently talked myself out of it. I'm going to start off with a semi-high profile game, and that's Clemson and Georgia Tech. Right now the number is at 64.5. Shocker of the century, I'm going under that number. S&P Plus has this number at 54, so I mean, that's absurd to be getting 10 points, and I feel pretty good. Clemson has the 4th best defense, defensive S&P Plus, and Tech is a below average offense. I believe they're like 48th worst or something like that, which might not sound so terrible, but they're below average. I don't see them being able to really move the ball. They want to not have to try and win the game with their quarterback, and I think they're going to probably see something very similar to what Miami saw, which was Clemson's going to force them to pass, and I don't see much success there. Realistically, I see this game probably similar type score to what we saw against Miami with with Georgia Tech scoring even fewer points. So, yeah.
Yep. Yeah, I think that's a really good one, just because I don't think Georgia Tech will be able to score much. And I don't think Clemson's going to put up 60 on their own. I guess they could if they really wanted to, but I don't think they will. I like that call. So my next one, Arkansas are 5-0 against the spread in their last five games. However, that is a little bit misleading because they are like double-digit dogs in almost all of them. So they haven't had to do a whole lot to cover those spreads. This game is down to 1.5. Give me Ole Miss. I will lay the 1.5 with Ole Miss and be happy to do so. If you want to get crazy, if you want to feel a little spry, go ahead and take the over. I'm not going to do it this week just because it is at 76. But all of Lane Kiffin's games have gone over this year by an average of 27.7 points. That's number one in the nation. That's thanks to Thor Nystrom on Twitter, at ThorKU. He's a good dude. He's pretty funny. But yeah, he's looking awesome. They are looking awesome. Their defense is terrible. That's my only hope is that they can get like two or three stops, and then I'm pretty sure they'll cover the 1.5. So Ole Miss minus 1.5.
So my next one I'm going to go with is Pitt and Miami. This is a game that I'm sure no one is surprised that I'm playing right now. The number's kind of low. It's down to 49.5. I believe it opened at 54. So I'm getting a little more nervous, but I would play it as low as 47.5, maybe 47. Miami's strength is their rushing attack. And so I think what we saw is that if you force them into the passing game, they are going to struggle a little bit more. We have seen them have bouts of being very explosive in the passing game, but that's really only been when the running game has opened up. And what's Pitt's defense, despite the fact that it's been quote unquote exposed over the past couple of weeks, it's really been by this elite pass, or not elite, but strong passing attacks. And I just don't see Miami being able to put that together. Pitt right now has the fourth best stuff rate and allows the second fewest line yards. I think they're really going to put Miami in a bind early and potentially force some turnovers in this game. I do like Pitt to keep the game close, as I mentioned earlier. And I do think the way they're going to do that is largely just creating havoc and making Miami's offense struggle.
Yeah, I like it. That line, oof.
Yeah, it's moving.
Anything under 50 just makes me a little nervous personally. And part of that is like just because there's so many unforeseen things that can take place, like a weird pick six or a muffed punt or something like that. So I never have the courage and fortitude to take those, but they seem to work out for you more often than not. So go for it.
I have to go full transparency. I just looked. The number's at 48 is the best number I can get. I'm taking it at 48 still.
You still are. Wow. You're a good man. My next one, real quick, UMass is terrible. They might be just the most hilarious team there is. They play Georgia Southern this week. Over at Odd Shark, the predicted score, it made me laugh so much. Georgia Southern, 45.6. UMass, 1.7. I thought that was really funny. I already put a bet on this one myself. I got the line at minus 28. I'm seeing now that it's up to 31.5. I'm still going to take it at 31.5. I liked 28 a lot better, though. But that's my next one for you. You're up, buddy.
Yeah, UMass is atrocious. That's a solid pick. Screw it. Let's go with some points. So Louisiana Tech, I like home favorite or home underdogs. So S&P Plus has Louisiana Tech as just a 6.5-point underdog in this. Once again, this is kind of a low total game and it's a big spread. Marshall runs the ball on 64.5% of their plays, and Louisiana Tech is strong against rush explosiveness, so it's unlikely that they're going to be giving up big plays. So that does mean that this game is going to be kind of eating up the clock the whole way through. In this situation, that probably is going to favor the dog, because like I said, I think that this game is less likely to get out of hand. So I'm going to take Louisiana Tech plus 13.5 against Marshall.
Yeah, and Marshall does look really good, but I mean, two touchdowns is a pretty big number. So I think you're good there. My next one is BYU at Houston. You're going to notice a theme real quick here. I'm taking the favorites this week. I'm laying the points with BYU. The Cougars, I know they're both the Cougars. They had a rough outing like you mentioned last week. I think they bounced back from that just fine. Houston looked really, really rusty. Yes, they pulled out a win, but they did have five turnovers in that game. those are not mistakes that you'll be able to get by with a formidable opponent like BYU. You and I talked a little bit about BYU this year. We like them. We think they're pretty strong. I don't know if maybe they're as good as we maybe thought 2 weeks ago, but I like their offense. I think they're going to be able to get a lot done in this game. So it's a Friday night special, which is also fun because I like tilting my head off on a Friday night. But Zach Wilson's looked really good. He's only thrown one interception. He's got six touchdowns and just about 1,000 yards on the year. So their running game looks good. And of course, we've got Gunnar Romney. I think it's Mitt's nephew or something like that. He's got 370 yards. He's leading the way for them receiving. So BYU minus 4.5 at Houston. That one's going to be fun. It's going to be close to the end, I think, but I think BYU pulls it out.
I think BYU gets it right this week and looks a lot better against this Houston team. So I like that spot. You still have a couple left. I'm going to let you go back to back here.
Yeah, I'll go UNC minus 13.5 at Florida State, and I'm also taking over 63.5. You might want to double check those numbers while I'm talking, because if that over moves up too much, I might be a little bit afraid, only because I don't know if Florida State's going to be able to put up their end of it. However, Jordan Travis did look a little bit more competent. They were able to score a bit against Notre Dame, as we mentioned earlier. This line isn't that big, though. I think UNC takes care of business. Howell finally got going last week. The running backs who we mentioned earlier, like Javonte Williams and Michael Carter, were delightful. They were able to do everything they wanted to. I just don't think Florida State can hang with them. So give me UNC minus 13.5 and the over 63.5. If it was 36.5, yeah, that I'd be putting my mortgage down on that. But 63.5, I don't feel too scared about that number.
I just double checked that number. You are good. So here is going to be my new favorite team to bet on this season. UTEP.
Yeah.
And Southern Miss under 56.5. So UTEP scared the crap out of me last week before the game started. So I wrote an article for the Action Network last week, basically hyping this game with UTEP and Louisiana Tech and how I was so confident in it. And then right before game, the total went up like 3.5 points, which meant there was a ton of money coming in on the over. So I just want to point out that I was terrified, but then my analysis pretty much proved correct. UTEP is one of the worst offenses in the entire nation. They have the 7th lowest offensive S&P plus. They have a 33% success rate, a 29.5% success rate on rushing plays. They are stuffed on 25% of their rush attempts, and they run the ball an average of 53% of plays. They average just 18.4 points per game. Love all of that. So Southern Miss, on the other hand, they are another team. They're a little bit more high scoring. They score, I think, 29 points on average per game. It's not great, but it's better than 18. But they rush the ball 53% of their plays, and they are stuffed on 20% of their plays. So both of these teams tend to be under 70 plays per game. They're not super fast. The pace won't be super high, and neither one of these teams are super duper effective. That leads to unders. I'm staying strong with this, and I'm going under 56.5 for UTEP and Southern Miss.
So full transparency here, which we like to say on the show. Your UTEP line last week, you texted me that the line was moving, and I listened to another podcast where the guy was pushing the over. He's like, you got to go over. And I went back and I looked at some stuff. I read your article over on Action, and I was like, you know what? I'm sticking with my boy. Matt knows what he's talking about. Bet the under, made some money. I was happy that I stuck with you. But I wonder this guy, it's a pretty popular podcast. So I wonder if he had some reasoning in why the line moved a bit, but you were on the right side of it. So kudos to you. My last one is UCF minus 3.5 at Memphis. I like UCF in this spot. They're 6-0 straight up in their last six road games against Memphis, and they've won. They're 10-0 straight up in the last 10 against Memphis. This line being as low as it is, I think if they win, they probably, 3.5, it's close, but I feel pretty confident in it. It's not too big of a number. I really think UCF is in a get right spot here. Like I mentioned, I'm excited to see what Dylan Gabriel can do. I have a lot of confidence in him. Their running backs are pretty fun too. They got a great offense. I hope they are able to slow Memphis down just a little bit And if they're able to do that, I think they get this pretty comfortably. So UCF -3.5 is my last on the slate. Did you see any others that you wanted to throw in? Or are you nice and
I think I'm locked out. I've tried. I'm really like staring at this Georgia Alabama number, but I think I'm gonna hold pat with my four. I like my four, and yeah, call it with four.
Did you see any like maybe long shot upsets, or maybe not long shot, but any upsets, any money lines that you might want to play this week? Kind of looking at the board, was there anything that you thought would be interesting?
So if I'm being honest, while I do like BYU in this get right spot, I would be a little bit okay putting a little bit on Houston. Not because I think that they're super likely to pull it off, but I think there's some value there. I do kind of like Arkansas. Again, these would be small bets. They would just be kind of throw them out there. And the one that you actually could probably get a sizable value on, I wouldn't mind putting a little bit down on Louisville. I think there's a chance for Louisville here to kind
upset
of
Notre Dame.
Yeah, I think they have a couple
545.
Of
you'd be making some nice returns.
My reasoning behind this one, it's again, I don't think it's the likely outcome, but I do think there's an opportunity where Tutu Atwell or Des Fitzpatrick, you get a few explosive plays. And what Notre Dame lacks right now is the explosive play.
Yeah.
And I am throwing one extra log on the fire. I'm throwing on Louisville +17.5.
All right.
Like I said, I do think that Notre Dame is going to struggle against explosive offense. And I think that without a vertical passing game, I just don't think they're going to be able to cover a big number. So,
yeah. And Louisville, that last game got away from them from a couple of just really unlucky turnovers and trying to press too much. And I don't think they're going to have that same problem. I like that one as well. Kind of some of the money lines I was looking at. I'll probably put some small numbers on. I like Kentucky at +190 against Tennessee. That seems like a pretty good value spot. And then South Carolina against Auburn, South Carolina +140. I'll take that. It's only a 3-point line. I think South Carolina's been really good. I've been impressed with them, whereas Auburn's been kind of underwhelming to me so far this year. So I like both of those. I think those could be interesting plays. And then if I want to get really feisty, I might, I was going to maybe do a little something with Syracuse +145 against Liberty. But I don't know if I'll do that one, but something to think about anyway.
You don't want to bet against Hugh Freeze?
Absolutely. I just know Syracuse has a way of letting us down when we need them to pull strong for us.
100%. I don't like them anymore.
Yeah. Well, thanks so much, Matt. That was good stuff. I'm really excited for this slate of games, as you can tell by my 152 picks. Let's go over the locks real quick. Give us your rundown real fast here of what you got on the board.
I got Clemson and Georgia Tech +64.5, Pitt, Miami +48, Louisiana Tech +13.5 home against Marshall, UTEP and Southern Miss +56.5, Louisville +17.5 at Notre Dame.
Great. And I'm laying the points this week. I've got Alabama -4. Against Georgia, we've got BYU -4.5 at Houston, UCF -3.5 at Memphis, Ole Miss 1.5 at Arkansas, the Tar Heels -13.5 at Florida State, and I'm also taking the over in that game. And then UMass at Georgia, I've got -31.5. So full board for me this week. I was able to sneak another one on your board too by making you look at the slate a little bit more. So I'm happy for that. Again, check out betonline.ag to play some of your bets. You'll find some good lines over there and some other contests. I like the prop bets as well. I have a lot of fun with those. Another place I've been making money is doing some prop bets for NFL games with using some of the RotoViz apps to do that and find some good places of value. Matt, do you have anything you'd like to share with our audience before we take off?
Buy Chris Olave and read my article.
That's right. You can find all of Matt's articles over on RotoViz and, of course, now at Action. Check those out. My Kicker column came out again this week. So if you're looking to stream, do that. Just so you know, Mason Crosby and Prater coming off bye weeks, they're available in your leagues. Go ahead and pick them up. It's a nice free kicker spot for you. All right. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back with you guys next week. We're also going to be jumping on with...
Before we get off, there's breaking news right now.
What's that?
Nick Saban has tested positive for COVID and will not be likely not be available for the game. So,
Wow.
Just throwing that out there.
Yeah. Can I wait till this number drops even more before we make it my lock? I'm still taking it at -4 though.
Yeah. -4 is fine, but it keep an eye on the number. It may move down. If it kicks off at 3, we'll give Stefan 3.
Yeah, I like it. But no, that's great. Thanks for that. That's it's not great for him. It's
hopefully he's fine. He's non-symptomatic at this time.
Good. That's good. Hopefully there's no spread as well. Get well soon, Nick. We'll be hoping you bounce back quickly. Thank you guys for listening. We will be on Travis May, the College to Canton podcast. This upcoming week, we're going to do kind of looking back at the rookie picks from this last year. Then the following week, we're going to be doing like a Devy Summit rankings, which will be a lot of fun. So you can find us over there as well. Otherwise, we'll be back on this one on Thursday or Friday, depending on where you listen. If you find it on our stream or over on the RotoViz Radio mainstream. So thanks so much for listening. We'll talk to y'all next week. I think this will be my last outro, and we're good.